Your old pal Ariel Helwani on this Wednesday, July 24th, 2019. Welcome back to a brand new episode of the MMA Reporters right here on ESPN. If you're wondering why I sound this way, well, it's because I think I lost my voice. If you notice, and if you listened or watched Monday's show, gradually throughout the show, my voice was starting to change. And I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but come Monday night, it was problematic. Yesterday, it was really bad. Today, I thought I was turning the corner, but now I feel like I am not. And it's quite painful, if I'm being honest. Now, the story I'm telling other people is that I'm so excited about UFC 240, and I've been shouting on all the rooftops here in New York City about how great the main event is and the co-main event is, but the reality is I think my son was sick and gave it to me over the weekend. Anyway, I'm still here. I'm still going to Edmonton, and I'm very excited about it all. Anytime I get to go back to Canada, great city of Edmonton. I've been there once before, UFC 215 to be exact, a couple of years ago. It's always very exciting, and I have said time and again that the arena there, Rogers Place, is maybe the best arena in North America. As far as the ones that I've been to, I think it's the nicest. They did a phenomenal job. If you're able to go to that arena, if it's for this weekend's card or some other card, I highly recommend it. It's beautiful. And so, of course, today on the show, we'll talk about UFC 240. Actually have a great guest coming on to talk about UFC 240, Rob DeMello, who's a broadcaster out in Hawaii, who's covered Max Holloway's career extensively and also knows everything about Hawaiian MMA. He's going to join us to talk about Max and how big of a deal this is and the state of Hawaiian MMA. I'm really looking forward to that. Also later in the program, we're going to talk to Adam Curley, who is a longtime Australian journalist who knows a lot about Rob Whittaker. Of course, it was officially announced yesterday that Robert Whittaker versus Israel Adesanya is going to happen on October 5th at Marvel Stadium, formerly known as Etihad Stadium in Melbourne, Australia. The biggest card, at least it's expected to be the biggest card in Australian MMA history. They're expecting 60,000 fans. So that's very exciting. We'll get Adam's thoughts on how big of a fight this is. Robert Whittaker, of course, he's been booked in Australia twice in a row, has had to pull out due to freak health issues, and maybe get a little insight into the history of the rivalry between New Zealand and Australia, because I feel like we here in the United States don't really understand it, but there's a rich rivalry there. There's a deep rivalry there, and they are going to tap into that as Israel Adesanya faces Robert Whittaker to unify the title on October 5th. So that's later in the program. Before we get to our first guest, a couple of news and notes. It was officially announced this morning that Chris Weidman will in fact move up to 205. He's going to be making his light heavyweight debut against one Dominic Reyes on October 18th in Boston. Good news that he's not fighting in New York City, because New York City and Madison Square Garden in particular has been a house of horrors for Chris Weidman. So it's going to be 205 for Weidman, and it's going to be Dominic Reyes next. And with Luke Rockhold losing earlier this month, I think the number one contender spot is on the line. It would be nice if they just come out and say it, because otherwise I thought Weidman should fight someone like Glover Teixeira. But in this particular case, they're putting him in there against a youngster, an undefeated guy, a guy who's on a roll in Dominic Reyes. And yes, I know his last fight wasn't the most spectacular fight, the win over Volkan Ozdemir, but still, the guy's on a roll, and he was in those talks to fight John Jones. Speaking of John Jones, yes, he has found himself in some hot water once again. We will get into that in a moment, but he does want to return on December 14th. His team doesn't seem to think that this latest incident will derail or delay his comeback. He was teasing yesterday on Twitter about Madison Square Garden. The latest I've heard is that it's still December 14th. He just likes to do this from time to time. And right now I would say the front runner to face him is Corey Anderson. And so we'll see how that plays out. So that's the story at 205. Also of note, Nick Newell has signed with Bellator, and that's exciting for Bellator because he sells a lot of tickets, and he will be fighting in his home state of Connecticut. He'll be fighting on August 24th in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And he'll be going up against Corey Browning, who's on some kind of roll as far as knocking off prospects or people who are popular. He has a win over Kevin Ferguson Jr. and has a win over Aaron Chalmers. So I like the fact that they're putting him in there against Nick Newell. Newell has signed just a one fight deal. He's fighting on the prelims. It's really just a play to sell tickets. But hey, it's the opportunity that he wanted. He gets in there on a big show. And if he gets a win, they're going to keep him around. There's no doubt about that. So this is what he asked for. And I think the fact that they're in Connecticut helped him because he's a huge local draw there in Connecticut. So that's the Nick Newell story. I reported yesterday that Ben Askren and Damian Maia is being discussed for later this year. I think a lot of people misunderstood my tweet. Askren's medical suspension is up in September. The fight isn't being discussed for September. It's for later in the year, but that's the one they're discussing. Not finalized, not done, all that stuff. You know the usual stuff. The UFC will change things on a dime, but that's the one they're targeting for both guys, and it seems to have been met with a lot of excitement. A lot of people seem to like it. Also, another fight that is being discussed and perhaps a lot closer to being finalized, the return of Yair Rodriguez. He really wanted Zabit Magomedsharipov. That's the fight that his team told me that they really wanted, but it doesn't look like that fight is going to happen. They want to save Zabit for Russia for later this year, and they want Yair to fight in September in Mexico City. So I'm hearing the front runner now to fight Yair is Jeremy Stephens, and that would be an opportunity for Yair to keep rolling after his win over the Korean Zombie, and a big opportunity for Jeremy Stephens to get back on track as well. And it would be a main event fight. BJPenn.com reported recently that the Korean Zombie versus Brian Ortega is being discussed for that card as well. We will see if that comes to fruition. Right now, Brian Ortega isn't doing a lot of talking, maybe some secret messages on Instagram and whatnot, but it would make sense to try to get the Korean Zombie in there early if they want him to fight in December on that card in South Korea. Leon Edwards, of course, is coming off that big win over RDA on Saturday, and now we wonder what is next for him, and we wonder if he's going to get Jorge Masvidal. We wonder if he's going to get a title shot against Kamaru Usman. There's a lot at stake there. So up first on the program is our own Mark Raimondi of ESPN to talk about that and other topics. Mark, how are you? I just want to say you made me talk for like 8 minutes there, and I have no voice, and you're just like gallivanting around Edmonton while I'm dying over here. So thank you very much for being so tardy.
If by gallivanting you mean sitting in my hotel room writing articles, then oh, yes, yeah. I am indeed gallivanting.
Oh, it's all about you, isn't it, Mark? It's all about you. Well,
what happened to your voice?
Well, it's apparently not around. I've lost it. I can't find it.
Where'd it go?
I don't know. Maybe I'll find it in Edmonton tomorrow.
You see what happens when you eat that well-done steak, Ariel.
That is exactly. You know, can I just say one quick thing about the well-done steak? It is so fascinating to me because this is a real commentary. It's a social commentary on humanity. Why do you care the way I eat my steak? I don't care the way you eat your steak, but yet this bothers people because of machismo and the alpha males out there. They need to cook their steak a certain way. No one cares. That's all I'm trying to prove here. Then I feel like I've proven that point.
I still think you're out of your mind, but hey, we can carry on.
All right. So we'll go from that. It's very hard to make this transition, but I did want to talk about something very serious right off the top of the show, and I was waiting for you to come on because this is one of those things where it doesn't necessarily fit in the MMA bubble, but I think it's on everyone's mind, and it's a combat sports story, and I think everyone has a heavy heart after hearing the news that the 28-year-old Maxim Dadashev, the boxer who competed on Friday in Maryland on ESPN against Subriel Matias, sadly and tragically passed away yesterday due to injuries that he sustained in that fight. By now, you've probably seen the footage of his head coach, Buddy McGirt, urging him to stop fighting going into the 12th round. A lot of people may not know, but the fight did get called off at that point, but just seeing the footage of McGirt trying to get him to say, I'm done, is heartbreaking in hindsight. And it was heartbreaking while knowing that he was in the hospital, and it's even more tragic after the fact. And so, you know, again, it's not an MMA story, but it's a combat sports story. And I don't know if now is even the appropriate time to talk about, you know, what can boxing do, or what's the difference between boxing and MMA and why one's safer than the other. But I'm just curious, and I've talked about this with Geth Davies on this program, as a combat sports enthusiast and as someone who covers combat sports for a living and loves combat sports, how do you digest news like this? How do you feel after hearing news like this? A young man died only because of the injuries that he suffered in a combat sports contest. I'm reminded of Howard Cosell, who later in his life and career turned on boxing and said he didn't want to support boxing anymore because he saw what happened to Muhammad Ali and others. What are the emotions that you go through as someone who earns a living covering this, but also loves these sports very much when you hear news like this?
It's really tough, Ariel, and you feel like it's a sport. It's combat, but it's also a sport, and you're supposed to feel like if everyone does everything right, the commission, the referee, the corner, the fighters, if everyone does everything right, the fighters will end up with some semblance of safety at the end of the night. And in this case, it kind of threw that idea right in its face, because everyone pretty much did everything right in this scenario, including Maxime's coach, Buddy McGirt, who, as you said, convinced him and convinced the referee to end the bout after the 11th round because he was taking too many shots. So to know that he then later passed away, even though everyone kind of went through the motions and everyone abided by the rules, and, you know, this was not a case of the commission botching something like we saw in New York with that boxer a few years ago, it's a hard pill to swallow. It really, really is, because, you know, when we cover the sport and we write about these commissions and the regulations, and it certainly seems like, you know, those things are in place to protect the fighters. What happens when everything goes right and a fighter still dies? It's a really hard one, man. It's a really hard one.
Yeah, you bring up a great point, because this wasn't a mismatch. It wasn't a lopsided match. He's not a journeyman. He's not a guy who's taken a ton of damage. He was undefeated. It was a very close fight on paper. The odds makers had it as a close fight. So it's really something that it's hard to derive any answers from or any things that we can do in the future to try to avoid it. And when I say we, I mean the people who are in charge of sanctioning and protecting these fighters. And my biggest takeaway is, you know, something that I wrote yesterday and that I've talked about before, about fans, you know, booing fighters or mocking fighters after a loss, or mocking them when they say no mas, like Roberto Duran, how there's a stigma attached to that, how there's a stigma attached to throwing in the towel, quote unquote. We saw what happened with Raquel Pennington and that story when she fought Amanda Nunes. And I hope that we remember that these fighters are quite literally fighting for their lives out there. Their lives are on the line. The worst thing imaginable can happen in these fights. And so I hope people remember that. And I know that they're paying a lot of money for these tickets, and I know that there's alcohol involved sometimes. But when you're sitting there booing two individuals who are stuck in a cage trying to beat each other up, and the only way that they can win is to inflict damage or get someone in a chokehold or in some kind of crazy maneuver, remember what is at stake. That, you know, sometimes it's a chess match, and sometimes fireworks aren't going to happen. They're not playing MMA. They're not playing boxing. And I hope that if there's one lesson for the fans that can be learned from all this, it's that, is to respect these fighters always, at all times, because what they're doing is really serious business.
It is a weird culture, and I feel like it is more in MMA than it is boxing, where the fighters are treated like their video game characters, or yes, their action figures on, you know, in like a kid's playset. It's not that way. These are real human beings with real lives, with real families. They're fathers, their mother, they're someone's son, they're someone's daughter. And the way that the things that get said to them on social media, and the way that some fans conduct themselves at the event, is really appalling to me. It's really one of the things that I like the least about MMA. And it's got nothing to do with the fighters. It has everything to do with the culture around the sport. And I don't know why that is. I don't know how we got to this point, but it is very disturbing. And this is another reminder that these are real people. Every single time they go into the octagon or the cage or the ring, they are, like you said, putting their lives on the line. And to boo them because they go for a takedown, or to boo them because it's a grappling match and not rock'em sock'em robots out there, this is an entertainment sport, but it is a very serious, very dangerous sport. It's a very scary way to make a living. And I just wish that, and maybe this changes things. I know it's boxing, not MMA, but I just wish that culture changed a little bit. I don't know how we got to this point, but some of the venom and bile I see against fighters on social media really turns my stomach.
Yeah, and I love the Rock'em Sock'em Robots line, because I've referenced that as well. Oh, someone gets knocked out, put them in there. 6 days notice, 2 days notice, yeah. 1 day notice. Like, come on, there's a lot that goes into these fights, and they're not just toys that you take out of the cupboard and put them in your toy ring and they fight it out. And I hope that we recognize that. And, you know, it's interesting. Yesterday I was talking to Daniel Cormier about this, and I asked him if he saw the clip of Buddy McGirt urging Maxime to stop fighting, and he said he hadn't. And I said, I just texted it to you, and I was just curious, you know, how he took it in, how he digested it, because I think it's different than us. He's going to look at, or any fighter is going to look at this incident through a different lens. And he said, I don't know if I want to watch this right now. I don't know if I could do that. And I thought that was fascinating. Here's a guy who's going into a fight in a month and knows the dangers, knows what can happen. And I think they all kind of compartmentalize things and put things off to the side and don't want to think about these things. But these things are very real. According to our stats and information group, the last noted death in boxing was in 2009. So it's been, you know, 10 years or so, but this has obviously happened before. And Paulie Malignaggi even talked about it recently, about the way the fans in boxing treat the fighters as opposed to MMA. Maybe they're more cognizant and sensitive to it in boxing, but I think everyone can learn that we need to respect fighters a little more. I'm curious, from your perspective, because you're so in touch with the regulators and the officials, have you talked to any of, you know, the commissioners out there, any of the commissions, any of the executive directors about their reaction to this, or if anything will be put in place, or if there's any talks about what could we do differently in the future? I know I'm putting you on the spot here, but I was just curious.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few people about it over the last several days, and nothing on the record, nothing like that, just kind of informal conversations. But I think the sentiment is basically boxing and MMA are dangerous sports. They're combat sports. Every single time a fighter steps into a ring or a cage, he or she is putting that on the line, and no one likes to see it. And again, there was nothing regulation wise that really went wrong here, and that is one of the scary things about it. The one thing that I heard too was, and again, this is something that it's very anecdotal. There's nothing scientific about this. It's just something that people have noticed over the years, is that when something like this happens, in many cases, it usually happens in long fights. It usually happens in long boxing matches. It happens deep into it, you know, 10th round, 11th round. And I'm not saying that there's going to be any regulations in place to shorten boxing, but maybe it's something to look into. The cumulative damage, it's very rarely, Ariel, where it's like, it's that one shot, it's that one punch, or that one, you know, that one knee, like in the Masvidal Ben Askren fight, that causes things like this. And again, this is not scientific. It's just anecdotal from, you know, from all of us watching a lot of fights over the years. It is usually the long fights, the long hard fights, where there is an accumulation of damage to the brain. That is usually when this kind of thing happens. Maybe it's something to look at in the future. I don't know.
We will see if anything comes of this. But just wanted to talk about it a little bit at the top, because, you know, it feels like everyone's thinking about it, and everyone is kind of going through covering MMA and boxing this week with a heavy heart because of what happened. And that is certainly understandable. Wanted to send our condolences as well to Maxime's family and his friends and his coaches, because I know they're obviously going through a very hard time right now. Let me ask you about John Jones. I referenced him at the top. I spoke about the story on my show on Monday. You've done a lot of reporting on this as well. And so there is no conclusion to this story, and there's no real update per se. We know he's his court hearing that he doesn't have to be at is in August, per his team, and they put out their statement as well. But I find the most interesting thing to come of this story right this moment is A, how John is just kind of like going about his way. Like, he was quick to respond to it on Twitter. He's talking about MSG on Twitter as well. Late last night, his team seems very confident that this will not delay his return, whether it's in November or December, it won't derail his career. And it seems like the fans are just sort of numb to it. Like, no one really, like, it wasn't even the biggest story. It should be. The details are very troublesome, but no one was really reacting to it. They were just kind of numb. Did you get that impression as well?
Yeah, the details are troublesome. I completely agree with you. I think the situation here in this case is that it is a petty misdemeanor. So it's a pretty low level type of situation as far as how the criminal justice system in New Mexico and in Albuquerque treats it. So I spoke to the Bernalillo County District Attorney spokesperson the other day, Michael Patrick, and he told me that this is a situation where it's the DA doesn't even get involved in this. It is so low level that it isn't even something that the DA comes in and prosecutes. It's actually the police just prosecute it themselves. It's almost like only like maybe a step up above like a speeding ticket, the way that it is treated in the court down there in Albuquerque. So it is not a very serious thing. They're not treating it as a very serious thing in the criminal justice system. It's probably something that he'll have to pay a fine for. I couldn't imagine any kind of jail time. But the details, they seem more serious than it's being treated, if that makes any sense. And I don't know the exact answer as to why that is, but from a purely perspective of law enforcement and criminal justice down in Albuquerque, it really is not being treated as a very serious allegation.
Yeah, and his team isn't treating it as such. They seem very confident that nothing major will happen as a result of this. And again, everyone that I spoke to was telling me he's hoping to return December 14th. He was talking about MSG, but he's known to sort of play with the fans online as well. I remember when he talked about fighting Stipe, and then like 3 hours later, his fight against Thiago Santos was announced. Going into that fight against Santos in July, the general consensus seemed to be that his next fight would be against Luke Rockhold if Luke Rockhold won against Jan Błachowicz. But of course he got knocked out. And so now I'm wondering if the Chris Weidman versus Dominic Reyes winner is going to be next for John Jones. I just spoke about it. It was officially announced earlier today. It's going to be in Boston. It's going to be on October 18th, a rare Friday night card. A, how do you feel about this matchup, in particular it being Weidman's light heavyweight debut, and he's going up there against a youngster? I thought maybe they'd ease him into things, maybe against a guy like Glover Teixeira, who's on a roll but older. And B, do you think the winner of that fight should be next for a title shot, assuming that Jones is going to fight December 14th against Corey Anderson, because there's no one else at 205, and I don't think Cormier is going to come back that soon? Do you think that the winner of that fight should be next?
It's certainly possible, and the UFC, and we've spoken about this as well on the show, Ariel, they seem to really like these young up-and-comer versus veteran fights recently. So this kind of fits that same bill, talking about Weidman versus Reyes. I think it's possible. I think especially if Chris Weidman gets the win, I feel like that would be a very interesting promotion and matchmaking for the UFC. They did Jones versus Weidman, former champ coming up from the middleweight division. And Reyes could also make a case, and he's kind of a young up-and-coming guy, but Weidman would be by far his biggest win. It really just depends on how that fight plays out, you know, if someone looks impressive. But if Jones comes back, I guess Corey Anderson would be the person, unless they did something different and had him fight at heavyweight, or there was some kind of super fight they could put together. But like you said, Daniel Cormier doesn't seem likely to come back. I don't think Brock Lesnar is coming back in December to fight John Jones, but you never know. But I could certainly see either Weidman or Reyes being one of the that could certainly be a title eliminator.
True or false? Leon Edwards' next fight will be against Jorge Masvidal or Kamaru Usman for the belt?
Ooh. You know what? That's a good question. I feel like the answer is true.
Oh.
But I don't know, because I still think we need to see there's one ship left to fall, Ariel, as far as the welterweight division goes, and that is next week, Colby Covington versus Robbie Lawler in Newark, that main event. So we need to find out what happens in that fight, and that will go a long way into deciding who gets the next title shot. Is it Masvidal? Is it Covington? Is it Lawler? Probably not Lawler. Is it Leon Edwards? And then whoever that is, the other person in question might end up fighting Edwards or Covington or what have you, or Lawler. You know, it really depends on what happens in that fight. But I feel like Edwards, who, by the way, that guy is really freaking good.
Yes.
I mean, he's really, really good to do that to Rafael Dos Anjos. He's on a great winning streak right now. I feel like even if he's not next in line for the title or for Masvidal, I feel like he and his team, they have no problem kind of sitting out and waiting to see how everything plays out. I could see them waiting and being strategic about what the next fight is, if you get what I mean.
Is this your first time in Edmonton?
My first time in Edmonton.
How do you feel about it? How do you feel about it so far?
Well, I got off the plane, took an Uber to the hotel, and I have not left. So I can't really say either way how I feel about it.
It's a wonderful city, and the Edmonton Eskimos are a great squad. I think we're going to go to the game tomorrow, right?
So yesterday, what's that?
I said, uh-oh.
No. Oh. So yesterday I had a very interesting phone interview with Roman Reigns.
Oh, yeah.
Of WWE fame.
Name drop.
And guess what? He knows Edmonton very well. He played for the Edmonton Eskimos for 1 year.
Wow. It's funny how it all ties together.
I was in the airport getting ready to go to Edmonton, talking to a former Edmonton Eskimo veteran.
Unbelievable. That's why you're the best. That's why, I mean, you somewhere.
Neither here nor there, but
you're able to constantly bridge the world of pro wrestling to the world of MMA. It's a beautiful thing.
It's a pretty easy bridge.
Yeah, it is. Some people want to deny said bridge, but we know that's not the truth. Mark, great stuff. Appreciate it. I'll see you out there.
Thanks, Ariel. All right.
There he is, Mark Raimondi of ESPN. Before we get to our next guest, and I'm very excited to talk to this man, let me tell you about our good friends over at Lightstream. Are you tired of credit card bills with high interest rates? Ready to pay off your credit card balances and start saving money? Get a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream with rates as low as 5.95% APR with autopay, lower than the average credit card interest rate of over 19% APR. No application fees, no origination fees, no transaction fees, no prepayment penalties. The rate is fixed, so it will never go up over the life of the loan. Plus, you can even get your money in your bank account as soon as the day you apply. The online application is so easy, you can apply right from your phone. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience, and that's exactly what they deliver. So just for my listeners, apply now to get a special interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/Ariel. That's lightstream.com/Ariel. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% autopay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/Ariel for more information. All right, let's get to our next guest. I'm really excited to talk to this man. He is my brother. We've been talking over the years. He covers the Hawaiian scene better than anyone. And with Max Holloway fighting in his adopted home country of Canada, I thought it would be really fun to have Rob DeMello on the program. He is the KHON News sports director. Again, he's been covering the mixed martial arts scene in Hawaii for quite some time, and he's got great knowledge of who Max Holloway is. So let's say aloha to the great Rob DeMello here on the program. Rob, how are you?
I'm doing good, my man. It sounds like you could use yourself a vacation in Hawaii is what it sounds like.
Yes, I could definitely use one of those. A little bit under the weather. I've lost my voice, Rob, but as you know, we power through these things. And I'm so excited to have you on because you know Max as well as anyone. You've been covering him for quite some time, and you know the scene so well. So first, let me ask you, when did you first come across Max Holloway?
You know, the first time I ever heard of Max was, early in his career, probably his second fight. He was fighting in Honolulu against Bryson Kamaka. The Kamaka family, a very strong family in the mixed martial arts scene. And so I was told, to, hey, keep your eye on this kid before this fight. And so I saw him in that bout, and he won that in the first round by TKO, I believe. And then he got a title shot right after that in Hawaii for the X1 lightweight title against Harris Sarmiento, who is the guy that I went to high school with. So I knew how tough Harris was going into that fight, and this was Max's opportunity to kind of really, I mean, you know, through the MMA scene, people already knew who he was and was talking about him, but this was his chance to kind of exceed that as far as Hawaii sports go. And it was a great fight. He won the title. That was his third fight of his career. And it was shortly after that, I'd say probably maybe about a year to the day around there, that he got his opportunity to go into the UFC. And so the first sit-down interview I ever did with him was the week before he left for Las Vegas to fight Dustin Poirier. And that was the, kind of the moment that I knew that, you know, this guy was special. This is more than just a good mixed martial artist. This is more than just a prospect. It was listening to him talk and how insightful he was and how committed he was, how much confidence he had in himself. I mean, the rest is history. From that day on, I've been covering very closely, and you know, I wouldn't say that I expected a future Hall of Fame career out of Max Holloway, but I certainly believed that he was going to be in the UFC for a long time, but he exceeded expectations for sure.
Well, I was just about to ask you that question, if you saw that in him when you first met him, but clearly you didn't. I didn't see it in him when I first saw him fight Dustin Poirier way back when at UFC 143. So that's fascinating to hear from someone who's been watching him for so long. He's very proud of where he's from. He's very proud of Waianae. And we see on the countdown shows, you know, what kind of place it is, that it's not your typical Hawaiian setting that we think of, you know, here, you know, people outside of Hawaii, we think of Hawaii as, you know, the magical place with the beaches and whatnot. Could you tell, what is Waianae like, where is he from?
So Waianae is on the west side of Oahu, which is the capital island in the state of Hawaii. And, you know, it's far away from Honolulu as far as, you know, there's no quick trip to Waianae, no matter where you are on the island. You know, it's going to take you a while to get to Waianae. And so, you know, it's kind of secluded in a way, and there's not a lot of hotel activity. There's not a lot of tourist destination. So it's just a very local community. And, you know, over the years, it's gotten a reputation of being a tough place, you know. And I think that's a lot of what Max's mission was, you know. And even like I talked about talking to him before that Dustin Poirier fight, I mean, this was a kid at the time was 19 or 20 years old that was talking more than just about this UFC debut. You know, when I would ask him questions about this debut fight in the pinnacle of MMA, you know, he was talking about wanting to show the kids of Waianae that there's another way, wanting to show them that with hard work, you can accomplish these things. And I mean, he was 20 years old. This isn't a guy that, you know, had to go through the, you know, the slums of across the country and, you know, fight in Alaska one week and, you know, in a couple weeks later be fighting in Iowa like a lot of the other Hawaii MMA fighters that had to work their way to the UFC in years past had to do. This is a guy that, you know, it was getting a fast track, but yet still understood that he was doing something more than just fighting for his career. He was doing something for the community. And so that's kind of Waianae in a nutshell, as far as he was a guy that wanted to kind of carry the flag for that community and show them that there's more than just the stuff you hear on the news or in the newspaper about, you know, this incident happening in Waianae or these people being arrested in Waianae. There's great people out there, hardworking people that just need to follow the right path, and that's exactly what Max Holloway did.
How big of a deal is it now when he fights, when he's defending his title, and how would you compare it to when BJ Penn was atop of his game around 9 or so years ago when he was the lightweight champion and really in his prime? How would you compare the two?
Yeah, that's really interesting. That's the question I get the most from people outside of Hawaii, asking, compare the, you know, the Max Holloway explosion to BJ Penn. And I always say, you know, it's really hard to compare them because they came at different times. You know, the fact that BJ got as popular in Hawaii, as a mixed martial artist. And you got to remember, this is, you know, before the UFC was on national television and before social media, most importantly. The fact that BJ was able to garner the attention that he did is pretty remarkable. I mean, you know, back then, to watch a BJ Penn fight, you had to, you know, you order your pay-per-view. There was, you know, a bunch of people would get together. You know, there's no ESPN Plus, and you could do it from your phone and, find a illegal stream or whatever it is that people do now. It really took a life of its own, and it changed mixed martial arts in Hawaii forever, is what BJ Penn did. So to compare the two, I think, would be unfair. With that being said, Max Holloway is a staple in Hawaii sports. When you talk Marcus Mariota and Colton Wong, DeForest Buckner, who's a pro bowler from Hawaii, I mean, the major stars in sports in Hawaii, Max Holloway is at the top. You know, he's there with Marcus Mariota side by side, Tua Tagovailoa, as far as the biggest stars in Hawaii. And for an MMA fighter to do that, if you were to ask me 20 years ago, even 15 years ago, I think you'd be crazy. But that's exactly what Max has done. And so, I mean, credit needs to be given in that regard, that Max has taken it to another level. And I think a lot of what has to do with that is that Max relates to everybody in Hawaii. You know, the MMA fighters in the past, you know, people respected them. They loved them because they would represent Hawaii and they're good at what they do. But what Max does is, you know, for the first time, you have grandmas and grandpas, you know, talking about Max Holloway fights. My own mother, who's never watched a UFC fight in her life, has an ESPN Plus account. And just because she wants to watch Max fight. So, wow. I mean, that kind of shows that the reach that he has here in the state of Hawaii.
Have you noticed a dip in his popularity because he's coming off a loss, even though different weight class, not for the belt, all that stuff? Have people changed their view on him because in his last fight, he finally lost?
No, that's the interesting thing, right? Especially in MMA, more than any other sport, is, you know, there's an aura and a stigma that dissipates with losses that other athletes don't have to deal with. And so the night that he lost to Poirier, that was kind of my question to myself is, okay, how are people going to react to this in Hawaii? And to be honest, I think that a lot of it has to do with him going up in weight. And, you know, so people view that as, okay, you know, he went up to 155 for the first time in a real long time. This was a step up in competition. And to be honest, I mean, I don't know if there's a feeling outside of Hawaii about this, but there's a lot of people that thought that he won rounds 3, 4, and 5 and could have walked away with that belt that night. So I don't think that there was any stigma lost at all as far as what Max Holloway represents here in the state and how excited people are for this title fight. And I think something has to do with that is Frankie Edgar. I mean, if you remember, Frankie beat BJ Penn 3 times at the time that BJ Penn was the Max Holloway in Hawaii. So to say that people are looking forward to the Hawaiian flag being raised on Saturday night with a hopeful victory over Frankie Edgar would be an understatement.
Yeah, that's a great storyline. A staple of a Max Holloway fight is when he posts that picture of him visiting that statue. Can you tell us about that statue? What is it? What does it represent?
That is King Kamehameha. So that is the first king of the Hawaiian kingdom that he united the islands and they went forward together instead of being separate islands being operated by, you know, their own warriors and royalty. He unified it and they move forward as a kingdom. And so King Kamehameha is looked at as the great here in Hawaii. And so before every fight, on his way to the airport, Max goes down to the Kamehameha statue and takes a picture. And, you know, I want to say that he hashtags it King's Meeting, I think what it is. And, it's a nod to the past of Hawaii for sure. And it's a nod to what Max believes he's doing right now, and that's leading people of Hawaii in his own way. So it's a beautiful sight for anyone that not only is of Hawaiian descent but grew up in Hawaii and understands Hawaiian culture.
it's a crime that he hasn't had an opportunity to fight as UFC champion in Hawaii. And I know this is a story
he's
been talking about for years that you guys have been pushing. And we saw what happened with Alima Leigh McFarlane in December and how she came across. Anytime you're able to bring someone back home, they end up being a bigger star because it translates on television. It's why I think they should go to Birmingham, England with Leon Edwards and why it worked so well with Connor and Stipe and Darren Till in their respective hometowns. Where do we stand on that? Do you think it will ever happen? Imagine if Max Holloway becomes champion, defends the title as much as he does, loses the belt, and never gets that opportunity to headline. It would be a crime. Where do we stand on this?
Yeah, 2 years ago after the second Jose Aldo fight, I said that if it doesn't happen now, it is never going to happen. Because really, I mean, there's, you know, there are peaks that you just can't recreate. And you know, the fact that, you know, at that time, Max had won 12 straight and, you know, you beat who's considered the greatest featherweight of all time back-to-back. You know, you have the airport arrivals where, you know, 1,000 people show up on a Monday afternoon to greet their champion. And you have all this going on. At the same time, you have, you know, Brad Tavares, who is rising into a main event slot last year, and so many other fighters. And the fact that they couldn't make it work, I'm not hopeful. With that being said, it was a good sign that it got as close as it did. You know, there was a proposal for UFC in August of 2018 to be held in Honolulu. You know, the UFC brass came to Hawaii. Hawaii Tourism Authority brass went up to Vegas, and they met on several occasions. And it looked like everyone involved wanted to make it happen. The problem and the part that a lot of people in Hawaii need to be realistic about, because when they hear that the UFC is asking for a lot of money to have an event in Hawaii, you just got to remember that, you know, Hawaii is different. You gotta travel. I mean, you gotta take everything, right? I mean, if there's a show in Austin, Texas on a Saturday night, you know, the ring, the setup, the staging, everything that comes with a UFC show is thrown into a truck. And they're already driving off to the next stop, and maybe that next stop might be New York or whatever it is. You can't do that in Hawaii. And everything that you're going to bring here, you're either going to leave here because you hope for there to be future shows in Hawaii, which, you know, if you don't have a Hawaii headliner and you don't have a Hawaii champion, then I don't know if that makes sense to the UFC to be holding events in Hawaii every year. And then the other alternative is to put it back on a boat or whatever it is and get it out of here and spend all that money that it's going to take to be able to do those things. So I just think that the stars aren't aligned for this to happen. But with that being said, you know, the fact that it got as close as it did is at least a sign that it's something that both sides see value in. It's just a matter of one day accomplishing some kind of middle ground to make it work.
Speaking of Alima Leigh, I've noticed that she's been very active on social media this week, talking about an issue, a very tense issue that's happening in Hawaii. But I will admit, I'm not an expert and I don't quite understand what is going on. And I noticed that yesterday, Max Holloway wrote a very long post about this. Could you explain to us what's going on in Hawaii right now? And it sounded like Max was getting pressure from people to speak up about it because he's in the limelight. And if from your understanding that is accurate as well, if people were trying to look to him because he's so famous and he's fighting right now, and there's a spotlight on him, that they were looking to him to do something about this.
Yeah, the best way for me to explain it, it's a lot like the Dakota Access pipeline protest from a couple of years ago. Essentially what it is there is a mountain on Hawaii Island, which is the big island, called Mauna Kea. And it's largest mountain and a very high peak. And it's, viewed as, a sacred land, to the people of Hawaii, and sacred in regards to it was, land of royalty, land of the king and queen. And the 30-meter telescope is being built up there. And what the 30-meter telescope is a 18-story telescope that takes up, I think, a 5-acre footprint on this mountain. And so you have a lot of Hawaiian people that are up there protesting, saying that this thing should not be built on this mountain. And at the same time, the constructors of the telescope are saying, hey, we went through everything that we had to go through. We went through all the environmental studies. We went through legally everything we needed to make this thing built. And we were supposed to start building it this past Monday. And that didn't happen because protesters blocked the road. And so that's where we're at right now. And it's a very touchy subject here. It's a very sensitive subject because, you know, it's that battle of, you know, astronomy and learning. And you know, this is a telescope that, according to the scientists, must be built on that mountain because there's nowhere else in the world that will allow the telescope to work in the way that it does atop Mauna Kea, because of the height, because of the wind up there, because of the visibility, everything. This is the only place for them. The Hawaiian people are saying, we understand that, but this is not the place to be having it built. This is sacred land. And I think then you start getting into, you know, some messy subjects where, you know, it's ceded land, where it's protected by a lot of conservation laws, yet 13 telescopes, smaller telescopes, have been built up there. So a lot of the activists are saying, like, hey, when is enough enough? And so that's where we're at right now. This thing has been going on for over a week. You have, on average, 1,000 people essentially camping up there, blocking this road for the last 7 days. And so Alima Lay has made her way up there, BJ Penn. A lot of people are very strong on this. And I will say, if you have time, go and read Max Holloway's post, because really the insane thing about all of it is that, you know, there's so many sides to this, and people are so vitriolic about it, whether you're on one side or the other, and it's gotten kind of ugly on social media. And it's incredible that a mixed martial artist from Waianae is the one that probably put the most profound, thoughtful, and understanding message out there regarding this subject. So, I mean, it just shows how special Max Holloway is as a person and as someone that represents the state of Hawaii, for sure.
It's amazing how he can not do any wrong on social media. Like, it's one thing, you know, to say the right thing, whatever, but like every time he posts something, like even when he didn't make weight against Khabib and stuff with Connor and whatnot, like the man is just, he is so on point. He is so thoughtful. He has a great team around him. I know he has a very, you know, close knit team, but I'm not well versed in this, and I really appreciate you educating us. Just reading that, I'm like, look at this comes from the heart. And this is someone that you want to get behind. This is someone you want to root for. I'm just curious, before I let you go, I've always felt that there's a weird relationship between him and BJ. Like, he is the next BJ, right? Like, BJ was kind of the guy who put Hawaiian MMA on the map, and it feels like there was a passing of the torch, but yet I don't feel like there's support there. Is there a backstory between him and BJ?
No, not really. You know, they did media with me. The UFC came down. This was, I want to say, right before Max's Cub Swanson fight. And the UFC got Max and BJ together, and they kind of did a media tour. And so they're in my studio, and you know, we're all talking story, having a good time, and everything was cool. And I don't think that, you know, it's gotten uncool as time has gone on. I just think that these are two guys at two different times of their life, and you know, don't live on the same island and don't cross paths a lot, you know. And you got to remember, you know, BJ wasn't fighting for a good amount of time before he returned from retirement. And so I just don't think there's a lot of crossover, and not to, you know, extend this and make this a bigger thing, but I think that's something that's important with Max, that wasn't there in Hawaii MMA before, is that, you know, a lot of people, when Max was coming up, the thing that he always heard was, you need to get away. You need to leave. You need to, like, you have a bright future, but you can't do it here in Hawaii. And I think a lot of people thought that because when you look at BJ's career, you know, the most successful run he had and where he was the most dominant, what I think a lot of people look back and they remember the most of BJ is his lightweight title run where he was training with Marinovich. And so that kind of like became the narrative that, like, if you really want to be the best you can be, you got to leave Hawaii and work with these trainers. What Max did was create his own little world-class system in Hawaii. And I think that kind of speaks volumes to what Max has done to change MMA in Hawaii. I mean, when you look at his striking coach, Ivan Flores, jiu-jitsu, Rylan Lazars, and his strength and conditioning coach, Darren Yap. I mean, these are three guys. These are three different places that Max goes to do his training. And you wouldn't believe how many other fighters are now following that suit, where they have a boxing coach here on this part of the island. They go to their jiu-jitsu guy, and then they go to their strength guy. And that was something that wasn't done before. Everything was kind of done in-house. And a lot of credit needs to be given to Max for changing that. And I think that's what I mean by, you know, these are two guys that don't have a lot in common, you know, outside of representing the state of Hawaii and being figures that are revered here in the state. Outside of that, I mean, you know, it's a 20-year-old and a 27-year-old and a 37-year-old. They just don't go to the same places. They don't have the same training partners. They're just not a bunch of guys that would cross paths a lot.
Such great insight, Rob. Really appreciate this. This is Rob DeMello of KHON News. A great follow if you're interested in Hawaiian MMA and Hawaiian sports. I love the tweet that you have pinned right now, because I think that Max's Hawaiian kickboxer walkout is one of the best in the sport right now. And you have a great sort of ode to that, and a nice little music video and a story on that as well. So it was really great to have you on to learn more about him and to just sort of set the table for this title fight on Saturday, what it means to Max, what it means to Hawaii. I loved every minute of it. So thank you very much for doing this, especially early in the morning over there in Hawaii. Rob, all the best to you, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Anytime, man. You take care of yourself. Aloha.
All right. There he is. Mahalo to Rob DeMello of KHON News. Before we get to our next guest, very quickly, I want to tell you about our good friends over at Cheap Heat. I've been telling you about them every single week. They're great people. Stat Guy Greg, Peter Rosenberg, they do a great show. If you're a fan of pro wrestling, this week on Cheap Heat, the boys talk about the mess that was the Raw reunion. Shocker. Dive into the mailbag and discuss the fall of Hulk Hogan. That's Cheap Heat, and you can find it wherever you get your podcast. All right, so now this is fascinating because Rob DeMello is in Hawaii, and it's around 8:55 a.m. over there on July 24th. So he's just starting July 24th. Now we're going to go from Hawaii to Sydney, Australia, where it's very early in the morning on July 25th, almost 24 hours difference between the two, 20, I think, to be exact. That's fascinating in its own right. I'm blown away by this. I'm very thankful that Adam Curley, a longtime sports journalist in Australia, is kind enough to be waking up very early for us. I think it's now 4:54 a.m. over there on July 25th. I'm almost embarrassed to have asked him to do this, but he's kind enough to come on to talk to us about the magnitude of UFC 243, which of course goes down October 5th here in America, but October 6th in Australia. Rob Whitaker, Israel Adesanya. Adam, how are you? Thank you so much for doing this.
Morning, Ariel. No worries. Thanks for having me.
Oh, good morning to you as well. Yes, and I'm a little under the weather, in case you're wondering about the voice. Yes, this is me, Ariel Helwani, and I'm really happy that you're able to come on. So you don't cover MMA as much as you did in the recent past. Now you're covering the AFL, correct?
Yes, correct. For those listening in America, that's our Australian rules football. So, not doing as much UFC and MMA as I used to, but still really keen and keeping up on all the news.
Of course, yes. So tell me about UFC 243. It was just announced that it's going to happen at the Marvel Stadium, formerly known as Etihad Stadium, in Melbourne, Australia. Of course, we remember UFC 193, Holly Holm versus Ronda Rousey. What a big event that was. Still to this day, the highest attendance for a UFC event, 56,000 plus. And they're expecting that this could do around 60,000. Do you think that's a doable number? Do you think that this is that big of a deal?
Yeah, absolutely. I think especially with Rob as the headline act, hopefully, we know he's had some bad luck in the past, but hopefully the time's a charm for him. But the buzz around Sydney and Australia and online that I've seen is huge. Melbourne is the self-proclaimed sports capital of Australia, but they will pack that stadium out. The AFL, the sport that I cover, has the grand final or our Super Bowl the week before. And they'll get around 90 to 100,000 people to that game, so that season will be over. The Rugby League Grand Final is that night on the Sunday, but that's in Sydney, here in Sydney. So there'll be no other competing sport in Melbourne on that Sunday. So especially with Rob headlining, it's going to be massive. It's just funny that we're talking about such a massive event in Melbourne when 4 or 5 years ago when I was covering the UFC, the cage was banned in Melbourne. We had to lobby the Victorian government to actually get a UFC event to Melbourne. So now this time I believe the UFC is working with Visit Victoria and tourism in Melbourne to really promote the city. So it's a massive buzz here in Australia, and it's just great to have a headline act as a local boy.
So it's interesting because it is a local boy and because there's a rivalry there. But as you mentioned, last February of 2018, he was supposed to headline against Yoel Romero. And then he pulls out in January, just a few weeks before, because of the internal stomach staph infection that he was suffering from, and also the chicken pox. And then this past February, he's supposed to headline again in Australia, and he pulls out on just hours' notice because he suffers from that internal hernia and the collapsed bowel. So do you think that there are fans out there who are like, come on, you know, I'm not going to buy tickets. He's not going to show up. I'm going to wait, you know, till closer to the event just to see if he makes it, because it's hard to go back to the same market for a third time after the last two times have fallen through.
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I think Aussie sports fans really get behind their athletes, and I think everyone realises that Rob, I mean, it was out of his control. We know he had a couple of freak illnesses, and I think a lot of fans will come from, well, I know I will be coming from Sydney and interstate. I got a lot of originally from Western Australia, and a lot of my friends are already talking about buying tickets and coming to see him. Rob's a great guy. I think everyone realises he's just had a bit of bad luck with the illness, and the UFC will no doubt put on a great card as they always do. So I think a lot of people will keep their faith in Rob, backing him, and especially being such a huge fight and a really exciting fight I'm expecting against Israel. So I don't expect the ticket sales to take any hits because of what's happened in the past.
My understanding is there's a rich sporting rivalry between New Zealand and Australia. Adesanya was born in Nigeria, trains out of Auckland, New Zealand, and Robert Whittaker was actually born in New Zealand, of course, now resides and trains out of Sydney. Before I ask you about their particular rivalry, is it in fact true that there's a deep rivalry there, and how intense is it? Is it like New York and Boston, if you're familiar with that here in the United States? What could you equate it so that we understand it here?
I don't think it's quite as intense as the Yankees-Red Sox. I'm a Yankees fan, so I know exactly what that sort of rivalry is. It is a pretty fierce rivalry, Australia and New Zealand. I guess in the rugby, our Wallabies versus New Zealand's All Blacks has been a really long history in the rugby and the cricket, which I know you guys over there don't really know too much about. We have a really fierce rivalry with them, but it's more a respectful rivalry. I think Australia and England in sport is more fierce, and there's more hatred, and it's I think you remember Ross Pearson and George Sotiropoulos back in the day had the Smashers and the Ultimate Fighter, that sort of thing. But Australians and Kiwis get on pretty well. It's always a respectful rivalry. I think because we're so close and so similar in the types of people that we are, but I'm not sure Rob and Israel will have that sort of respectful rivalry leading up to the fight. I guess more from Israel's side, I think he's going to be more trash talking and that sort of thing. But yeah, the rivalry is huge. It's just more respectful, if you can, I guess, if I can put it that way.
Is there any concern that it will get ugly? Because I know that Adesanya has called Robert Whittaker a fake New Zealander, and also I think a fake Aussie as well. And he's used a term for him, which escapes me at this time. And then Whittaker said, well, you're not even from New Zealand. And so it feels like we're tapping into something here. Is there any concern that this might get ugly? Like, you know, Rob has always been a very respectful guy, doesn't talk trash, but we're starting to see him get a little agitated in the early stages of this promotion. What do you think?
Yeah, it's funny. I just thinking about, I don't think it will from Rob's side. And I think both guys are really respectful of each other's talents and the people that they are. I think, as we know, the fight business does tend to turn people a little bit, but I think Israel might get more on the trash talk, I think, than Rob will. And I think if Rob does eventually, if he does go down that path, it might be an encouraging sign for Israel because, as you said, Rob's usually respectful and doesn't get into that side of it too much. But I don't expect Rob to delve into that too much. But you never know in a fight game. And these are two proud men, and if things go down one path and Rob feels like he's been disrespected, he might fire back. But, yeah, I think that'll be one of the more interesting things about the matchup in the lead-up to the fight.
Where would you rank Rob right now as far as the most popular Aussie athletes? Is he up there with the biggest names? Do you feel like he's still, you know, because he's a cage fighter, do you think he still has a little more work to do maybe after this fight that puts him over the edge? Or is Rob Whitaker news, is that national sports news now?
I guess he's probably not up there with our football players in terms of popularity and that sort of thing, but he's definitely the number one fighter in Australia. You probably know of Jeff Horn, who fought Manny Pacquiao in Brisbane a couple of years ago, Anthony Mundine. Rob's definitely the number one fighter in the country, and he's getting a lot more mainstream news coverage. I remember when I first started covering the UFC, when Rob won the Ultimate Fighter and I interviewed him in Sydney here, and I think I was the first person to interview him on camera, and he was just so stoked to get that sort of coverage. But now he's in the papers every time. When this fight was announced, the papers covered it extensively, and he's on the TV a lot more these days. But he's not really up there with our footballers or Andrew Bogut, who I think you know from the NBA side of things. But he's really getting more popular each day, and I think once this fight gets a bit closer and once he actually has the fight, if he gets 60,000 people to Marvel Stadium, then everyone's going to know his name.
Were you at UFC 193?
No, I didn't make it, unfortunately, but I heard it was a really great atmosphere, and as I said, a lot of people that I knew, friends and from across the country, travelled to see that spectacle. So I expect the same thing, and I'll definitely be there this time.
So it's interesting because I was at UFC 193, and of course, when an event happens that is accommodating to us here in America, in Australia, it happens in the morning. It happens Sunday morning. And I felt like it was very quiet early on, and I also felt like the stadium was so cavernous that it was kind of hard if you were up top to really understand what was going on. You had to watch the screen for the majority of the time. And then, of course, once the Ronda Rousey knockout happened, the knockout of Ronda Rousey, then everyone exploded. But I'm just wondering if you have been to Marvel Stadium, how you feel it is, you know, like from a viewing perspective, and do they care about the fact that these events are happening Sunday morning over there, or are you just so accustomed to that because the majority of the events happen here on Saturday night?
Yeah, I think the fight fans here are used to it. I remember the Mark Hunt Bigfoot Silver fight that happened in Brisbane. I was covering that at the time, and the gates and doors opened at 7:30 in the morning, and there was a line all the way down the streets. So I don't think the time factor actually hurts the events. I have heard that the UFC talking about different configurations for the stadium, Marvel Stadium, this time around, just to enhance the experience for fans. And I don't think anyone really minds what time it starts. If it's a bit early and they've been out the night before, then maybe that explains why they're so quiet early in the day. But I think if the fights are there and the fighters put on entertaining fights, then you'll see a really great atmosphere.
Do you think that we will see a true sellout, and is it possible that it will end up with more than 60,000?
I do. It all depends on the card, and I've heard you guys talk about maybe the winner of Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar fighting Alex Volkanovski, and we've seen some talk about Dan Hooker and Ally Quinta. I just think it depends on how many marquee fights the UFC brings and puts on the card. Obviously, I think it's probably harder for the UFC to get big names to come down to Australia, given the time it takes to get here and the time adjustment. If they can get it organised early, I think there's guys like Ty Tuivasa and Jimmy Crute, who are Australian local fighters, Jake Matthews, guys like that will try and get on the card, and they always pull the Australian fans in. So I think it just depends on, apart from Rob and Israel, which is a marquee fight in itself, if the UFC can get a couple more big names on that card, maybe we'd love to see Cowboy Cerrone or someone like that to really cut through and brings fans through the door. If we can get another big fight like that on the card, then I definitely think it'll sell out and be 60,000 plus.
Last thing, who do you think wins?
Rob Whittaker, I think. I think that's a big surprise to you. Being an Aussie, I think I'm always going to back the Aussie in, but I just think having seen his fights over the years, the couple against Yael Romero, I just think he's got that thing that you're just born with. Fighters can be talented and train hard and all that sort of thing, but I think when it comes down to will and heart, I think Rob's got that advantage over Israel. Israel's got amazing skills, and I think he's going to be a great fighter, but I just think Rob's, in the end, his will and heart will get him over the line if he can get a 100% training camp, which I don't think he's ever had, and stay healthy and 100% and come into that fight healthy, I think he gets the job done.
Adam, I really appreciate you doing this, especially so early in the morning over there. Thank you again for the insight. It was phenomenal. And if you're interested in Adam's AFL coverage, check out afl.com.au. Perhaps we'll see you over there in Melbourne in October. Thank you again for doing this, Adam. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate it, Ariel. I'll see you down here at the fights.
All right. There he is, Adam Curley, longtime journalist. As he said, has been covering Robert Whittaker for quite some time. And this Saturday's fight between Max Holloway and Frankie Edgar is connected to UFC 243 in October, because I expect them to try and get the winner of that main event to fight Alex Volkanovski, perhaps in the co-main event. And that would certainly help them get to that 60,000 plus number. I was there for that fight against Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm back in 2015. And I'm looking forward to being back in October for this one. Robert Whittaker versus Rousey. It's a great fight. Also a great fight, Max Holloway, Frankie Edgar. I am hanging on by a thread here, but we have fought through, and I am also looking forward to Chris Cyborg versus Felicia Spencer. Mark Raimondi has a story right now on ESPN handicapping Chris Cyborg's likely next stop, regardless of what happens this weekend. But I wanted to save that discussion for next week, because I do think this weekend's result against Felicia Spencer will determine where she goes. If she wins, she has all the leverage. Every momentum piece is in her favor. But if she loses, does Bellator want her? Does the UFC want her? Does Ryzen want her? It's going to be very interesting. A lot at stake for Chris Cyborg, especially coming off that knockout loss, but also a lot at stake for Felicia Spencer, who right now wants to be put on that fast track. So that's UFC 240 in Edmonton. I will be there. And also want to remind you, my radio show is on live at 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. This Saturday we'll be on during the fights, during the prelims, so you can watch them with us like we did back at UFC 239. Thank you very much, Mark Raimondi. Thank you very much to Rob DeMello and Adam Curley. Again, thank you very much to all of you for listening. Thank you for subscribing and downloading and rating. We appreciate it more than you know. Enjoy the fights this weekend. I'll talk to you from Edmonton.